Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric, along with Obi-Wan Kenobi, and we finally found him. Sean Desai is here, so it's a very exciting. We told you that the Thanksgiving edition was going to be special, a little bit longer, and part of it is because we're going to have to teach Sean how to do podcasting all over again, because it has to be 2 months, right?
I don't think you have to reteach it, but yeah, it's been a while.
It's a Christmas miracle he's here.
Yeah, no, I've been really busy, guys, for sure, but I mean, I like the new setup.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. it's kind of nice to be downtown and be able to look out.
Lots of foot traffic right here.
You don't like the snow, but it's kind of nice to look out and see the snow.
Yeah, this weather has been really strange. It's 1 month early, right?
Essentially,
technically.
Yeah, technically. Especially, I mean, I don't hunt. I don't think, Joe, you don't hunt, do you?
No.
You know, like hunters hate it because the snow, I guess, makes it really hard to kind of chase down the deer because they kind of bed down when it snows or whatever. So they're not very happy about it, but if you're trying to get into the Christmas spirit, as we head into Black Friday, the snow can only help to do that. And since Dana White isn't completely Satan, he actually has given a break in the schedule. Because I can't even imagine if you were a fighter this week trying to cut weight as we head into
holidays is the worst.
Or, like, even Thanksgiving week, could you even imagine like having to stand in the kitchen and be like, no, don't worry, I'm just going to suck on my ice cube.
Not fun.
Cut weight.
I used to tell promoters, don't ever book me between December 15th and January 15th, because it's just not going to happen.
It's just not going to happen.
Not going to happen. The weight is not going to happen.
Yeah, no. Not the attitude. It's hard, because it's just a hard time of year to do that.
Yeah.
Now, granted, we get a card immediately when we return, so it's not like if your name is Robbie Lawler or your name is Johnny Hendricks that you're enjoying a whole lot of turkey right now. For this weekend, you get to essentially enjoy turkey and football if you are an MMA fan, because there isn't a whole lot going on.
Speaking of the schedule, though, they announced the 2015 lineup.
Yeah, and let's
45 events.
Let's start there, because, of course,
that's about 20 shy of this year's.
So far, yes. Yeah. But, I mean, as we were ending the last show, we were talking about this big announcement, November 17th. Yeah. Gather around the Twitter sphere. We're going to – and it was essentially – they read an Outlook calendar to you, which was – based on Dana's tweets alone, I'm assuming was not the grand plan.
It wasn't, no.
I know you and I have been kind of chasing down Front Row Brian to see if he kind of knows what it was supposed to be, but I haven't seen anything. Have you seen anything, Sean?
No. I haven't.
So
you speculated it was going to be Brock Lesnar coming back.
But even if that's true, and
I've been gone for 2.5-3 months. That's the first thing you guys want to open up with.
Well, no, I mean, it's not Brock. The first thing. It's just as much as that name gets bantied about, and as much as it raises your ire, you need to understand that he is still under contract with the WWE through April. So even if that was a thing, I don't know that they would have let him announce it, because. We'll get off wrestling in 1 second, I promise.
Sure, sure.
Even if that was a thing, they wouldn't let him announce it, because that would ramp it up right to WrestleMania and would hurt their pay-per-view numbers. So I don't know that I believe that.
So is he actively wrestling?
He is currently actively wrestling and is rumored to wrestle again at WrestleMania.
Sean,
and
he's the heavyweight champion in the world.
You don't know these things? No, I don't.
You'll know when you get your Christmas gift. Okay. So I don't know what the big announcement was supposed to be. I've been anxiously trying to find out some rumor or supposition, but I just don't think Brock would have been one that.
And it can't be a super fight of any kind that we can.
None that would be interesting. I mean,
all that buzz has died. It's died.
Well, all that buzz has died, and we'll talk about it here probably in the second segment. And if you look at the business model of the UFC, it's probably not in their best interest to try and make a bunch of these super fights, because the injury bug has.
I heard it has
hurt them really, really bad. But we start with the Fox Sports 1 card this past weekend. A fantastic, I dare say, probably one of his best outings. Of Frankie Edgar, as he just took Cub Swanson to the woodshed.
Agreed.
And finished finished that fight with 4 seconds left. Sean, you obviously the resident expert in the encyclopedia of MMA. Have you seen a better Frankie Edgar fight?
No, I think Frankie's we've been waiting for him to get to 145. Now that he's there, he's what, his fourth fight or third fight at 145, something like that.
The only person he's lost to is the champ Jose Aldo, who everybody else at 145 is.
Yeah, no, he's looking solid. He's looking great. It's you know, towards the beginning of round five, the end of round four, I was like, well, he's definitely going to win by decision. And then sure enough, bam, you know.
Can you break down that finish for us? So he was going for a rear naked choke, but he had it over the jaw. And Cub Swanson was saying that he felt like he was going to break his jaw.
No, actually.
He was pulling it to the side.
Well, he wasn't pulling.
Kind of like Liz Carmoose.
He was pulling. No, it wasn't. Rousey. No, it wasn't that kind of a jaw crank. He if you rewatch it, Cub Swanson, from the neck down, his body's literally in one spot, and Frankie's grabbing his head and pulling it completely to the. So he was grabbing his head and like right. How you would hang somebody, basically.
Yeah, John Claude Van Damme.
Yeah, style. And he's just really pulling off to the side, and the way that crank was more than just the jaw. I mean, his head was turning almost 90 degrees, and it was pulling away from the body because. Frankie was in a full mount, but I think he posted up on one foot. So he had one knee down, one foot,
mm-hmm.
and that's a nasty leverage to have. And if you look at it, there wasn't much, you know, rear naked. There wasn't so much of this. It was more of just pulling his head away
right.
from his body. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that's one way to get a finish for sure. You know?
4 seconds left, the latest submission in UFC history.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, Cub knew that there were only 4 seconds left and chose to tap because he said he had his jaw broke before and didn't want to have go through that again.
Scurred.
Well, I mean, scurred, sure. But, I mean, prior to this, as we're heading into this week, he's promised, look, if you beat Frankie Edgar, you get the title shot, dude, because you've been on a tear.
Yeah.
We want to put you in that spotlight, blah, 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 blah.
Was
so,
it eight wins streak? There? Was it eight wins?
Or seven six? Or eight. Seven, so, yeah.
Right in there.
Well, this would have been seven, right? So he gets the title shot. And so you know as well as anyone, as you and Kevin Lee are going through this process, that you don't want to get injured in this thing, you know, especially like a broken jaw when – you've gone, in my scorecard, three rounds that were 10-8. You had no chance in winning this thing. Why? I mean, I don't know. There's no dishonor in tapping to
save
your jaw.
Oh, no.
Agreed.
Here's the thing. This is the thing that kind of gets to me, and this is a totally different subject, but, you know, there's that thing out there where MMA fighters get promoted to black belt, and a lot of guys, even Jose Aldo, say, you know, you must wear the gi. You have to compete. It's earned. It's not just because you can fight. But I don't know if Frankie's a black belt. I don't think he is.
Sure.
But Cub Swanson is. But like Leonard Garcia is a brown belt. I never see these guys doing any kind of grappling naga. I don't ever see them in a gi or in their promo stuff. You never see them training in the gi. So, you know, kudos to Frankie. You know, he taps out a black belt, kind of like how Uriah does it all the time. Because I think Uriah, with gi, he's a white belt. You know,
I agree,
he is a white belt.
Frankie Edgar trains under Ricardo Almeida.
Sure.
He is a black belt, and he's a collegiate wrestler, too. He was Division
We know he's
one.
A wrestler for sure.
Yeah. He still actually does, like, random exhibition wrestling tournaments.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, great. Then, you know, black belt, taps out a black belt, awesome. But what I'm saying is, for Cub Swanson, you know, I'm not saying that he's not, but to have a black belt defending a rear naked choke, and I mean, trust me, that was a crank, not less, you know, wasn't much of a choke, but he could have survived that a little bit more. But if you watch it again, I mean, he taps right away, so obviously either the mental fear of breaking his jaw again, or maybe it was just crushing so fast,
sure.
so quick.
Well, because I went back and watched it right before we started, right? And he's from the moment it's closed, is tapping all the way against the
fence.
Like
it wasn't, you know, you just see Frankie pulling, but you don't see him crank. I mean, it was weird, and he tapped fast. I'm like, he probably had either a previous injury or, you know, there's something going on there, but. You know, it was an awesome tap.
And, you know, if you were one of the people, we'll go back a second just because I feel, heading into December when we're going to be talking a lot about Tough and the women coming out of Tough, it's worth noting Paige Van Zandt, an amazing fight on Fight Pass that most people probably missed.
Yeah, that's the one I didn't see.
You know, most people missed it because it was on Fight Pass, but what a brilliant.
They got the bonus.
Yeah,
brilliant fight between those two. And shame that, you know, it hadn't been seen more, and I imagine you'll get to see it here and there as it shows up.
That would be cool if they could have done like a little swing bout after the main event, but it was all five rounds.
But they were all all of the all but the heavyweight fight went to decision, you know, so you had, but
Paige is only 20 years old too. She's the youngest strawweight in the UFC.
Awesome.
Great fight. And one, if you've got Fight Pass, go back and check that out. And I thought the main card was a lot of fun. The Matt Wyman Valley Flag fight was a blast. I thought Camus beating Pickett, I thought was a fun fight. Edson Barboza getting back on, you know, on the winning streak. Bobby Green claiming this might be his last fight is a bit of a shame, but still a fun fight to see Edson Barboza kind of turn the corner and get back to what we had remembered him from the big brutal wheel kick win.
Yeah, you could definitely see the Diaz brothers' influence on Bobby Green, not just the way he fought, but like his mannerisms and how he was trying to get Edson in his head. And I mean, did Edson kind of run away a little bit? Yeah, from time. But I mean, it was a perfect game plan. He executed, you know, right when, because I think he told Joe Silva, hey, he's running away from me between rounds one and two. Well, in round two, man, that wheel kick landed, the punch landed, and that's not really running away. That's setting up, you know, setting up your strikes.
Well, and I would challenge somebody who says something like that he's running away. You know, you're in an enclosed space.
Yeah.
And one of the skill sets of being in that enclosed space is cutting off the octagon. It's actually one of the scorable parts of MMA is octagon control. And so if he's able to run away from you, and it didn't look anything like to go back to the Dennis Hallman, George Grizel fight when he's physically actually running away from George Grizel.
Yeah, one guy, too. I forget who he fought. The guy who got knocked out by Rich Franklin, he looked like...
I know who you're talking about.
He had, like, gravel in his name. Yeah, I forget what his name.
Yeah. The Rock or something
Yeah,
like
The Rock. Nate Quarry. There you go. Thank you.
He had gravel in his name.
And he fought Caleb Stern or something.
Yes, yeah.
That was the worst runaway fight.
But the Grizel fight is actually when they changed the rules, right? And they can now deduct a point. This was nothing like... My point is this was nothing like that.
Yeah.
And I still feel that as you're in this season of 2014 where it's rife with... injuries and it's rife with opportunity, right? Because those injuries are presenting things, you know, Mark Hunt and Verdun, we'll talk about that in a second, but rife with your opportunity, it's your job to control the octagon. I've never heard the Diaz brothers say that. They may say it in a fight to get in your head, but you never hear them kind of just outwardly complaining about it. It's a fight. They're just
Carlos Condit ran from Nick Diaz for five rounds, and he was doing the motion of running, and I think that's why he lost for that interim shot. I still think he won that too. So he's complained plenty about guys running from them, that and wrestling them.
Yeah,
among other things,
running, wrestling.
Back to that fight, I think Carlos won by a split. Technically, because he just landed a little
bit.
If
you're not engaging and you're running from your opponent.
Well, Edson was definitely engaging, so back to that fight.
Agreed.
Yeah, there was no problem there.
Yeah, but a lot of fun fights. I was talking a little bit before the show, though. You get to the end of this, right? You wake up on Sunday morning, and you've got two interesting problems. You've got Joseph Benavidez, who, much like Chad Mendes, much like Frankie Edgar, are world beaters for anybody who doesn't have gold around their waist.
Yeah.
There's just nobody that can compete with them. Benavidez, even in round one, minute one, looked like he was in a different league.
Yeah.
A different league. Yeah, like, he could not stop Ortiz, and Ortiz hung in there, and I give Ortiz all the credit in the world to be able to survive all three rounds, but they were not fighting on a level playing field at all.
He was a half step ahead of him the whole time.
And so what do you do with these guys? Like, Frankie Edgar, to me, clearly gets the title shot, even though he was beat by Aldo. I know everyone wants to see Conor McGregor, but we've got to get Conor past Dennis Seaver.
Conor's got a couple. He needs two more fights before he gets the
title
shot.
And
didn't Dana White tell Conor he gets a title shot if he beats Seaver?
Probably,
I think he did.
But I think you get into this debate, and if Ken were here, he would have this debate, that you get in the debate of, and I know Dave Meltzer, I think, wrote about it this weekend after the fights, is that there's the Lady Justice, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. There's the who deserves it because their record's amazing, who deserves it because people are going to watch those fights, right?
Well, let's be honest. They're based on brand management, not on merit.
I mean, out of everyone out there, if I would have to watch a rematch again, I would watch the Chad Mendes because he actually looked really good against Aldo. And, I mean, you know, it wouldn't be a rubber match. Obviously, Aldo would probably beat him again. But, man, that was a great title fight. It was fun. It was, you know, you get to see the champ get hurt a little bit here and there and, you know, bouncing back and forth. But as far as, like, matched up evenly, that was a good fight. Yeah, I'd like to see Connor do it. But, I mean, does he deserve it? I don't think he deserves it yet. I mean, I think if he fights Mendez and beats him, then 100%, you know, go for it. But
well, I mean, I think nobody's going to tell you if you beat Dennis Eber and beat Chad Mendez that you don't get the shot, right?
Yeah. You could do Frankie Edgar, Conor McGregor, for the winner that fight gets a title shot.
To me, that's dangerous on so many levels, right? Because it's dangerous because if Frankie Edgar gets beat by him, what does Frankie do, right? He's beaten everybody in the division, but now this other guy comes in.
He would have to fight Chad and get another another spot,
I guess. And then on the, you know, on the
it
other
would
side,
test Conor McGregor. Everybody says he hasn't fought a wrestler
so,
yet.
So we're
and,
all
and
so
Frankie
we're
auto- is a great wrestler. So that
we're
would
automatically
be a great test.
Betting on Conor beating Seaver. Right?
Yes,
we're not
pretty much.
About
yeah, I don't think anybody is banking on Seaver.
For me, and
that'd be a nice upset. It would be like he'd probably be like an 8-1 underdog or something.
And look,
McGregor.
I am the.
I think it's closer.
Oh, if Seaver won or McGregor.
If Seaver would beat him, yeah.
Oh yeah. You'd win a lot of money.
Go drop $100 somewhere, guys.
So I guess I understand that I've bought into the hype train. So before you send me terrible tweets or Facebook messages about whatever, there are plenty of people that like Conor McGregor.
I like him.
I'm not alone in this.
He's
in
awesome,
the same
dude.
but I just think, aside from the outside shenanigans that everyone seems to be gravitated towards, he just looks so different than everybody else in that division with his striking, the way that he presents himself.
Because he has a martial art background.
Yes, but he's got a martial art background that he seemed to unlike Lyoto Machida at 205. Now, at 185, we're having a different conversation, but 205, Machida was not able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, where McGregor at this weight class is taller than everybody in that weight class. He's able to approach it from a modern MMA perspective, not just, I'm going to stand in a karate stance. You know, like Wonder Boy Thompson, right? Wonder Boy's had some really awesome wins.
Dude,
really,
he's got a tough fight coming up.
Well, I mean, look, anytime you can, that's the one against Thatch, right? You got Thatch. Yeah, Brandon Thatch and Wonder Boy in one fight. It's like, if you're an MMA nerd, that's like,
I think he's in Denver too, right?
That's like, grow a mustache, get crazy horn rimmed glasses, and drink really expensive
that's
beer.
In Denver.
Like,
that's
Thatch's
sort of crazy match. But I just like the way he approaches fights, and I think it's different enough that it gives guys a hard thing to train for. Like if you're a traditional fighter and you've got to train for a southpaw, that's a different element.
Right. Yeah.
If you're at 205 and you've got to train for a dude who has tree trunks for arms and John Jones or Gustafson, it's hard to find guys to emulate that. I think it's going to be hard for a lot of these guys at that weight class to find somebody to emulate Conor McGregor.
And he says that he performs a lot better at 155. He says at 155 he's a different Conor. He fights completely different because his training, his diet, everything is different at 155. He feels a lot better at 155, so he really wants to pursue that. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, 10 pounds, but 10 pounds is a lot because you got guys who can do weight cuts almost from 200 down to 55.
Sure. Yeah, well, and
you don't see too many 190 and 200-pound guys making 45. That doesn't happen.
Oh, that doesn't happen. And let's be honest, Conor McGregor, clearly a business person, right?
Oh, he's
and
smart,
you go to 155, you're not getting a title shot for 6 years.
Unless he gets the belt from 145.
This is what I'm saying, right? Like, if he goes right now, right?
He
goes, okay, well, it's clearly going to be Frankie Edgar and Chad Mendez, and they're going to deal with this thing, and I'm not going to get the shot, so I'm going to go up. You're stuck in that mire.
But he is smart because he's like, well, let me go beat up Diego Sanchez, and that'll put me less than 6 years away from a title shot.
But I don't know at 155 because it's everybody in there is a number one contender.
It's a stacked
everybody
division.
In there is
the
a number one contender.
The 55 division, I mean, Kevin's in that division, and it's like, I mean, unless you're a really hardcore UFC fan, not too many people know who John Tuck was on our last fight. That last fight was on Fight Pass, so it was even more difficult for people to see that one.
But we've said it on this show, and it's not just because he's a friend of the show, but Tuck was a hard test for him.
Yeah, that guy's jiu-jitsu was pretty smooth. I mean, we weren't maybe watching the fight, there could have been some moments there, but I mean, being there and being in his corner with all of his fights – I never saw one threat coming at us. So we looked good in that fight. I loved every second of it. So.
But, you know, I think the chances at 155, if you're somebody that fights at 155, if you're Kevin Lee, if you're Conor McGregor, if you're Kevin Gastelum, I don't, whatever, whoever you want to put in there, your only two chances to the title shot are be healthy and in shape all the time.
Mm-hmm. Short notice calls.
Short notice calls.
Soto, right? 135.
Right, right. That's it's that, or you literally have to beat 10 guys from number 10 all the way to number 1, and that's
starting
how you do it.
Starting with Barbosa.
But I mean,
he was number 12, right? And now he's
up there.
Yeah. So I get why he's not going to do that, even if he feels better, because it's such a long road. To get 10 fights, Sean, would be 6 years.
Yeah, because
he'll pick a fight with a top. You know, top five guy, maybe even the champ.
But,
and that would get him up to 155. But he's still got to deal with 145 first. So we're talking down the road a
bit.
But don't
he? Yeah, he's going to need the belt to pick that fight. Like, if you want to be full Chael Sonnen, right? You want to, you've got to have the belt to start calling up.
He could get in Pettis'
even though
head.
Chael Sonnen never had a belt.
I mean, I think
enough.
It's reasonable.
But I mean, that's why I'm saying full Chael Sonnen, not, you know, half Chael Sonnen.
I think he could get in, like, for example, Anthony Pettis' head. Because, you know, he's a little bit of a brawler, picks a big fight with him, turns it into a thing. They're calling each other out. Now you got Pettis calling Dana White saying, I want to kick this Irish kid's butt. Fight made.
Yeah.
Based on him talking his way into it. Either way, he's got to work his way through 145 first.
It would be interesting to, honestly, if Conor would ever just start talking crap about Donald Cerrone, that would be interesting to see if he would do that or not. Because Donald is... I think he's kind of like one of the guys when it comes to title fights or that one fight, the title eliminator. He tends to choke up a little bit. Other than that, Donald's he's a badass. I mean, he just runs through people.
He seems quite a bit bigger than Conor.
Oh yeah, he's 6'1" or 6' even or something like that. And I don't really see, you know, Conor yelling out his name, but he's at the 55. He's yelling at the right people. Definitely 45. He's done enough to get.
You know, if you're yelling at Diego Sanchez, you're doing it because you know you're going to goad him into standing in the middle of the ring and letting you do whatever crazy thing you want to do to him. And you know,
he's smart. He's not yelling at Donald Cerrone.
No, he's not. And especially, I as much as I love Miles Jury, unless Miles Jury seriously surprises me, I think a lot of people will be less apt to call out Cerrone's name after that fight.
Yeah, because that's going to be. If Miles gets through Donald Cerrone, then I'll start buying whatever Miles is selling. Because up until now, I'm not a fan. I mean, I'm sort of.
I'm not even a fan
of Miles Jury. I'm so. I'm like on the fence about the guy because, you know, I'm just not completely sold on it. If he beats Donald, I'm like, okay, cool. You know.
Did you train with the Mad Alliance?
No, I never trained with him. I don't know. It's just something about him. I don't know if it's because he got smashed by Aya Quinta and he goes around and like, oh, yeah, I'm an undefeated fighter. I don't know if that's it or not. But
when did he get smashed by Aya Quinta?
In the house.
Oh, in the Tough. House. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But, you know.
Right.
But, and look, true to heart. If I was in the house and then and I lost, but then on record I'm still undefeated, in my head I would even beg people, do not say I'm an undefeated fighter because I lost to that guy, man. You know what I mean? Like you sleep at night. If he ever says, hey, your opponent is hurt, he's injured, we're going to have you fight Aya Quinta. It makes sense. He beat you in the house. You know he's going to be in his head. He's going to be like, oh, fuck. This is going to be a tough one.
Right. No.
Are
and
we okay?
Yeah,
that?
We're fine.
Oh, okay.
We're
I didn't.
Fine.
I'm
yeah.
so used to the old school.
It's all good.
You know, he's going to be like, oh,
totally,
it's going to be
it's going to get in his head, obviously.
Yeah, especially what he did to Ross Pearson.
Uh-huh. For sure. For Ooh. Sure. And then before we get into the next segment, want to go back a little bit to UFC 180. A huge, huge fight at heavyweight as Mark Hunt goes against Fabricio Werdum. Mm-hmm. Second round TKO. But what's interesting about that fight is Mark Hunt, once again, everything he was advertised, right? And I'm glad you're here so that you can talk some sense into me, because I'm having a hard time believing that was 7 minutes of strategy for a flying knee from Fabricio Werdum.
No. That was desperate. That was like, and I like Werdum a lot, and I was actually pulling for him against Kane. But when he was, you know, with Hunt, I always will pull for Hunt. He's just that kind of a fun guy. But if that's the shape and that's the style that Werdum was going into for the Kane fight, That won't work. That Verdum will lose. The Verdum that we saw fight against Brown, that Verdum will win the belt.
Yes.
He was almost too happy-go-lucky going into it.
Yeah, that one was smiling. He looked
cage.
A little bit unhealthy. He looked a little bit too skinny.
And
so Mark Hunt was winning that fight, right?
Hands down. I'm standing in my living room at midnight trying not to wake
Cinderella
everybody up.
Dream.
I'm like, this is going to happen. Yeah. I cannot believe it.
Caught him and dropped him, and then Verdum caught him with a flying knee. Actually, Verdum said that when Hunt hit the ground, he was verbally tapping. The ref just didn't see it, so then he had to clip him a couple more times before they called the fight.
Yeah. Crazy. And you got to give credit to Hunt. I mean, here's a guy 40-some years old, and he got the short call. And I think in his interview, he said not too many people accepted the fight.
Well, I mean, who would, right? Like, Mark Hunt's one of those guys that you call. Donald Cerrone. You call Mark Hunt. Yeah. You know, those are the guys that you call when you want them to take a fight on 3 weeks' notice or whatever.
30
because,
pounds over.
You know,
they're
going to do it. And, like, you know, to Hunt's credit, right, he only said it once, I think, but his whole three-week camp or three-and-a-half-week camp was cutting weight. He didn't train at all because he couldn't. He had to get down from 612 pounds or whatever he walks around at to fight at 265. But a very fun fight. I was super stoked to see Kelvin Gastelum beat Ellenberger. What a great couple wicked jiu-jitsu transitions there, you know, to finish that fight.
He must have the meanest rear naked choke. Think about it, because every time that guy gets his arm around someone's neck, I mean, they tap.
And what's fascinating is, right, he fights at UFC 180, gets this huge win against Jake Ellenberger, and they give him like 6 minutes to rest before they give him Tyron Woodley at 83.
Yeah.
That's going to be a tough fight for him.
You think that's going to be a tough fight?
He's a young guy, too, and I would say that he's not the best Kelvin Gastelum he's ever going to be yet.
I think every time he steps in there, you've got a new one.
Yeah, he gets better and better. So, I mean, this is
like in a fight game, you got to be when you touch 28, between the age of 26 to 28, you're like, ooh, here it comes. 28 to 32, you're at the peak.
Right.
You are peaking.
I completely agree with that.
Crazy,
this guy's 23, so I almost feel like, should he develop his career a little bit more before he goes that far? Or do you test yourself and see how far you can go at 23?
To your point, right, if he beats Woodley, what are you going to do with him?
Let him rest.
give him a year off or whatever.
Let him
chill
out.
Yeah, let him train.
Let these welterweights kind of, you know, thin out a little bit, and then bring him back in the mix. He's not going anywhere.
And my favorite fight, you know, we've been talking about the Aldo weight class here for a minute. We'll continue this in a second, because my favorite fight from 180 was Lamas's win over Bermudez.
Ooh. Everyone kept saying Bermudez is the dark horse, and he's the sleeper of the division.
Nope.
I didn't think so either.
I kind of was – I was like, Bermudez is a – he is a badass, but –
He is, but
Ricardo,
like –
Ricardo.
When I met Ricardo when he fought in Chicago. And he's one of those guys, right, that, like, not a lot of people – they saw him and they maybe – or maybe they didn't see him in the Aldo fight. It doesn't matter. But, like, not a lot of people are screaming his name.
Yeah.
But he, another one of those guys that I think if you called him right now,
he would be the dark horse of the division.
Certainly a guy that, you know, he gets a couple more wins and redevelops himself, because I think aside from that Aldo fight, every other time he comes out, and he went the distance with Aldo, right?
He did.
Yeah, he went the distance
five
with
tough
Aldo.
Rounds.
Five brutal
and
rounds.
And was able to walk the next day with no problem.
Yeah.
He couldn't walk out of the ring. I don't think you could walk with no
problem. Sorry, man. I just throwing it out there. Come on.
But a huge win for him. So 180, a very, very exciting card. We get ready for UFC 181 as we turn the corner, not this Saturday, but next Saturday, with some huge fights. We will we'll talk about those next, though. It's Way of the Warrior. You can follow along on Twitter and Facebook by searching WOW Show. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show. It is Way of the Warrior. Eric, along with Sean and Jobi-Wan Kenobi, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. Talked a little UFC 180. Talked Fox Sports 1 this past weekend as Frankie Edgar absolutely trounces Cub Swanson. And we have an insane amount of news to cover. We talked a little bit about UFC and their big announcement. I'd say that in air quotes. If I was a TV show, you would have seen that. The big announcement for 2015, which turns out to be they have Outlook at the UFC. So congratulations to them. They're going to be doing a bunch of events, and they're apparently going to have to, because the injury bug that we've been complaining about for 12 straight months has cost them 40% of their revenue.
The injury bug and the oversaturation of, you know, their market by putting on 50-some events in 1 year.
You guys believe that 40%? I mean, that's kind of a big number.
Why would
it's
you
estimated
it?
By S&P that their earnings will be down 40%. And so they degraded their credit rating, which wasn't like AAA anyways. Yeah. They're only in the Bs right now. So, yeah. I mean, it's a pretty legitimate estimate, right?
Okay.
It's not just some reporter coming up with
no,
it.
No, no. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, it's kind of a big number. And, again, why would you report it?
Well, I think you legally have to if you're, you know,
public company.
If you're a public company. Yeah. But I think...
Although they're not a public company.
I was going to say.
Yeah, they're not an IPO, but they're a they're not a publicly traded company, but they're a company that exists in the public eye. So there is stuff that they have to report, and obviously this is part of it. And as much as it's been exciting to see the coverage of insurance for fighters and how that kind of changes the game, my hope is that... this is part of the overarching strategy. You know, let's remember the first couple of years that the Fertittas and Dana White were at the helm. They lost an insane amount of money.
Yeah.
So much so that they had, you know, as the mythos goes, right? I'm not in anybody's head, so I'll buy into the mythology of it. As the mythology goes, right, they sunk their last three nickels into the Ultimate Fighter, and it turns out to be this, you know, huge thing that takes the sport into the mainstream and kind of is a building block for where we are today, where we have Fight Pass on all of these devices. We have a show on Fox Sports 1 on Saturday nights. You're seeing advertisements for the Ultimate Fighter while...
Ultimate Farter?
Yes. That's a new show. That's how they're going to make the 40% back. It's with this comedy show called
The Ultimate... There's probably a lot of people that would sign up for that.
Ultimate
Can I be the coach?
Yes, sure you can. You know, so the Ultimate Fighter's on during the NFL. Like you're seeing the tentacles kind of go out into the culture in ways that make sense, but still were not there 3 years ago. And so while 40%, like I said, is an astounding number,
right,
my hope is that, you know, it was part of a nobody plans to lose 40%, but that thing was part of a larger plan.
Yeah,
you know?
I hear what you're saying. Their business plan may have been that they're going to lose 40% in the first year, and in year seven, you know, they'll realize a gain on their investment. With all that being said, the injury bug did have a huge factor, but I think the biggest factor was just the oversaturation. You know, too many events. Other than the three guys sitting in this room right now, who watches 45 UFC events? And even at that, there's random events in, you know, Austria and
I'll pause right now and tell you that there's three guys in this room right now. If Ken were here, there'd be four. None of the four of us watched all of them.
Exactly.
I'm telling you that right now. And this
is,
and you know, we do this as a hobby, but essentially it's, you know, we do this show every week. And so it's part of doing the show is to catch the stuff. I didn't watch all of them in real time. I watched all of them, but I didn't watch them in real time.
Yeah, no. You know, especially when you had the double hitters the same night.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of difficult to do, too.
Or starting at 4 a.m. Who's going to get up at 4 a.m. other than Bill Vandaloo does? He's the only guy I know who literally gets up at 4 a.m.
I'm pretty sure that Bill Vandaloo doesn't sleep, really. He just, like, that's what he goes to work. Yeah. He takes care of his family, and then he watches UFC at whatever random time that stuff is on. So,
cool job.
40% loss. We'll see what happens in 2015. Like Sean alluded to in segment one, the current schedule that they released as part of the quote-unquote signing of Brock Lesnar, I mean the 2015 big announcement, is much lighter than it was in 2014. And I don't know if that's because they're going to backfill at some point with all of the crazy events that we've come to expect.
Is the Brock Lesnar going to fill the 40%?
Yeah, he's going to take,
absolutely.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean,
they're probably really desperate now to get him.
Well, as you look forward to 2015, we've got a lot of things to be excited about, right? You've got Weidman and Belfort, and Belfort passes the first test, which is exciting, I think, for everybody who wants to see that fight.
Weidman passed a test today, too, this week.
I don't know that anyone was doubting that that was a thing. That's much less of a story than Vitor Belfort passing the test. We'll come back to you in 20 minutes. You know, you've got Ronda and the cat fight, right?
That should be a good one.
Which people are excited for.
Yeah.
You've got Cormier and Jon Jones. People are super excited for
one.
One of the ones that I think I find in the first half of the year really interesting is, of course, the Nick Diaz-Anderson fight.
Of course.
Fun
fight.
Well, and I was talking to one of the guys here just of what an interesting fight that could be, just because – how the two guys fight, you know, which Anderson Silva is going to, and I'm saying things that everybody knows, right? But yeah. One of the things that you don't really pay attention to the Diaz brothers is the way in which they win those fights is just by power, you know, in his words, powering you down, right?
Yeah.
Body shot, body shot, body shot, body shot, body shot. And eventually your body just turns off like a light bulb. It's not dramatic wheel kicks from Edson Barboza, but still a really brutal way to go. And so you've got these, what, five fights that people are excited about that lead us to the first half of the year. And I'm actually answering your question in a very long way. But this last half of the year, there's really nothing in the books, right? So they certainly would want something. Maybe it isn't Brock Lesnar, but they certainly would want, if Kane doesn't come back in 2015, in by March, he's got to vacate the title and Verdum's the champ. Mm-hmm. But if that happens, anybody go to the UFC ranking system, look at the heavyweights, and go, who's going to sell a $60 pay-per-view?
Yeah, so when they announced all these
fights. Verdum and JDS, is that what we're going to – are we really going to pay for that?
Poor JDS. I feel bad for that guy, man.
So they announced all these fights, and they didn't – they only put the dates past like the first
month.
Whereas I think if they would have announced some bigger fights, okay, we got a couple guys on the bench, and in June we're going to have this huge fight, and in August it'll be this huge fight.
Well,
that would have bode well for them.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm such a hardcore fan that when I hear okay, I'm not a fan of Brock Lesnar. That's no secret.
That's fine.
But let's just say I was, and then I hear, Brock's coming. He's fighting October 31st. I'll be like, that's a long time from now. Okay, whatever. You know what I mean? And then I get disinterested and do something different.
And I don't, to be clear, I don't think that was the announcement. I think it was going to be something. I don't know what it was going to be, but I think it was going to be something more immediate and more impactful, because I think once you get past Super Bowl card, Diaz and Anderson, there's really nothing out there.
Sure.
So this big announcement, all it did is reinforce the four, five fights we have in the first month and a half of 2015.
Which is fine. I mean, I don't like to plan too far ahead.
It's fine, but when you're talking about losing 40% of your revenue, I think you need to have something that builds on top of each other. And I'm not saying that they need to roll out a tournament or anything like that, but they needed to have some sort of thing. And some of the cities...
Maybe the return of GSP.
Could be. That would be a huge thing.
Yeah, they met with him, but then they said that he wasn't committed or that interested in coming back.
Yeah.
Because they flew up there and, had dinner with him.
And, he was on Chael's podcast. And if you're not downloading Chael's podcast, you certainly should, because I think it's from a pure entertainment perspective and to get your daily dose of Uncle Chael, it's...
Has he started his ESPN gig?
This past weekend.
I didn't see him on it at all. I thought they announced it that he was going to be, and this was his debut, but I didn't see him on it. I went to the website, too, to try and poke around.
Well, to be fair, the weekend that he started was the same weekend we had to suffer through that horrible Stefan Bonner, Tito Ortiz fight.
Oh, my God.
Tito came back, though. The guy
came back from being obsolete.
To he's back. He might even get a title shot in
from
Bellator.
Really obsolete to less obsolete.
This was like their highest ratings. They did 1.2 million views.
Scott Coker's work. It had nothing to do with Tito.
It peaked at 1.2 with Tito and Stefan Bonner.
It's a huge
number.
I'm saying he's a burnout, but I'm saying he made his own. But let me just pause for a second and let everybody in on a little behind the scenes action. Right before we sat down to do the show this afternoon, Joe asked me what I did this past weekend, and I said that I went to the Grand Rapids Comic Con, and I thought it was really cool. And he laughed out loud as if I had went to a My Little Pony convention. Here we are, 45.
Sean's trying not to laugh right now.
I mean, why are you still laughing?
Here we are, 45 minutes later, where he's got his Punishment hat on and his Tito Ortiz shirt on. Like, you have no like.
I'm just pointing out that the dude at 40 reinvented himself.
Of the people I know in my life.
But how did he reinvent himself?
You've surprised me twice. Once, that you're the dude that makes fun of me for being a nerd. Two, that 45 minutes later, you're the dude who's going to try and explain to us that Tito Ortiz is back, as if that's a thing.
He reinvented himself.
He absolutely did.
But did he do like a jumping spin Jean-Claude kick that we
no,
didn't see?
No, I mean, they were terrible, right? They both
are way past. Was that fight on Mars? Because it felt like it was like really high elevation.
Did you guys flip over and watch it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I mean, what? When's the last time you watched a Tito Ortiz fight?
I was hoping Stefan was going to beat the crap out of him.
To be fair, I flipped over only so that I could start the hashtag things that are better than Tito and Bonner.
There you go. I just wanted. But when I saw Bonner, like how way out of shape he looked,
he was soft.
He had some titties on him, and I was like, whoa.
Well, and you look, you know, so
he's not going to win.
So this fight is terrible from the jump. Terrible. It's beyond terrible from the word jump. But I walk away from that going, I know that they're going to have a huge night, which good for them, but what's next, right?
Tito Rampage.
Fine. Okay. Whatever.
Yeah, reinvent yourself with Rampage.
Reinvent yourself with Rampage. And maybe you could, I mean, Sakuraba fought this weekend. Maybe you could get him to join Bellator. That
he
would
can't
be
fight. I don't think they would pass him in the States. His CT scan or his MRI.
Yeah, no, I was totally kidding.
Sorry.
Totally kidding.
Well, I'm a big fan of Sakuraba.
So am I. And I watch Metamorphosis, you know, right? It was, but what I'm saying is, I watched it and went, why did anyone think Stefan Bonner was a good fighter at any point?
He was never the most technical guy.
I don't think he was ever a good. Well, like what I was trying.
Well, he was on testosterone
without going back to Wikipedia career, right? And forgetting about the failed Anderson Silva drubbing Pete's test. I was trying to go back and think, what did he do other than punch Forrest Griffin for 15 minutes? What did he do without cheating and Googling? What is he going to be remembered for?
He's just a brawler. He's going to be remembered for the Forrest Griffin fight, and then they had a rematch. And that one was pretty good too. That's
it was all right. Yeah,
it was all right.
First one was awesome, no doubt. I mean, he didn't beat like Keith Jardine or something like that.
Okay. Yes.
I'm helping out here. But I mean,
are you helping or hurting, Sean? I feel that you're hurting.
Well, look, they hurt the sport more than what we're saying right now by them two fighting. It was horrible.
It was terrible.
And all the other fights. The main reason why I tuned in is. One of my friends fought on the undercard, which wasn't on, but I was hoping they were going to air it. But then I definitely wanted to see, what's his name? Chandler and was it Brooks?
What a weird fight that was.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah.
Standing.
But that was a weird standing, like.
I give him all the credit in the world, though. He's made no excuses at all.
No,
you've got to give him all the credit in the world for as weird as that thing ended. Yeah. No excuses at all.
And, they're doing that. They did the 205 little standoff. They lined those guys up.
Right.
And that was, it was kind of cool to see. But, bottom line, I knew the main event was going to be garbage. And I was hoping to, I like to watch Tito get smashed, but whatever. Because
you got to see Melvin get smashed.
Yeah. I just love hearing, Tito's excuses. Like, he's the master of excuses. I love it. Like, when he loses, he's like, I don't want to make an excuse. I'm like, all right, well, here it comes.
Here it comes.
Yeah. So don't say anything then. Just be like, hey, he beat me. Whatever. But, the good thing, backing up to the UFC thing, Anderson doesn't have to worry about Nick Diaz checking leg kicks, so that's going to be good for Anderson.
Sure, but of those fights, right? Like that. To go back to that for a second, I'm really, really interested in that one, and hope that, knock on wood, all that stuff stays.
All of us are going to want to see: is Anderson going to throw his left kick or not?
Sure.
Yeah.
That's the first. And if he does,
we talked about
he'll probably throw it to
week.
The head because you can't. It's hard to really break your ankle.
That's
going to
be in the
head.
Back of his mind, no
but
matter
he won't throw
what.
It
before
inside
he
leg
that.
Kick again.
Yeah. Do you think the weight difference is going to be a challenge for Diaz?
No, he's fought at 85 many times. I mean, he's perfectly
fine.
So
you don't agree with GSP? GSP had come out and said that he thought that Diaz would have been better to do that at 75, 76.
No. The only thing is that we all know that Anderson. You saw that little sparring picture. Him and John Jones looked like they're in the same weight class.
I didn't think so. I thought
Jones
made he made Anderson Silva look like he was his little brother, like he was playing with him.
Frame wise, because he's 6'4" or whatever.
What would you do to be a fly in the wall in that match?
That would be fun just to to watch that sparring session, obviously. But I mean, length and the reach and everything on Jones, he'll make almost everybody look smaller. Even some of the heavyweights, he'll make them look smaller. Put him next to Kane, I'm sure. His height and his frame is going to be bigger than Kane. Kane's just a thicker guy, so Kane will look bigger. But like that, the way that's going to look when, because Anderson's what 6'3" and Nick is 6 or 6'1".
Yeah, Nick hasn't fought at middleweight in a long time, Sean. He had some catch weights out there, but he's
been
at welterweight
for a long time.
The
middleweights would have been at Strikeforce, right?
Yeah.
Or Elite XC or whatever it would have been.
Yeah, he's been at welter for a while.
Yeah, I mean, he's fought as low as 160. I remember way back in the day.
He fought at 155.
Yeah, I don't think 85 is going to be an issue, though. I don't think he'll have any problems fighting at 85. I've seen him fight at 85, and, you know, I mean, I think the guy's 100% vegan, so I don't think putting on weight's going to be an issue either, you know. It's when you're a vegan, weight, your body weight's never going to be a problem. You can put on weight, you can put take off weight. It's just when you're when you eat like we do, steaks and cheeseburgers, right. Yeah, that's when it becomes an issue. So I think he'll be fine.
It's when you're not KL209. What? Yep. Like that sort of thing. Speaking of fights that we might see in 2015, looks like TJ Dillashaw wants to fight Dominic Cruz in early 2015, which...
That's going to happen.
Yeah, it's certainly going to happen. He wants it earlier, I guess, than later.
Good for Cruz. He didn't spend that much time in his last fight.
No, he did not. And I don't know... Will that be a huge draw? I don't know. I think you're going to have to maybe either put that on.
Do like a double hitter, like with the.
It'll be a big draw for that division.
It's a huge draw for that division, but I don't know that you can stack it by itself, especially, like I said, you know, I don't want to keep going back to this 40%, but, you know, when you're trying to make money, you're going to have to, like Sean was alluding to, you know, you're going to have to do big stuff. What you're doing in the first 40 days of 2015, you've got to do that all year long.
Yeah, your flyaways can't be your main event for a pay-per-view.
No, you're going to have to get somebody else in
there. Well, they've done that.
Yeah, Demetrius Johnson can't.
Gone well.
Yeah, you just can't get. Well, it's because of cancellation fights. I think that was the Jon Jones and Cormier. They were supposed to be.
Well, and it was Demetrius Johnson, and it wasn't Chris Cariasso. It was somebody else. I don't even remember at this point, but it wasn't him. Neil Magny, we've been talking about him on a 5-fight win streak, and he gets to drag Josh Koscheck out of retirement and fight him at UFC 184, which I think is a weird reward.
When is 184?
A weird reward system in the UFC.
Do we have a date for 184?
Joe,
we'll pull it up.
Because, I mean, Neil should really take some time off. That dude had, what, 6 fights last year?
6 fights, yeah. Oh, and he won five of them
in
a row. He
was a busy guy. I mean, he's probably got paid. Nice.
February 28th is UFC 184.
So he's got some time. Gets to enjoy the holidays.
Ronda Rousey versus Kat Zingano. That's going to be huge, too. Bigfoot Silva versus Frank Mir in Souza Jacare Souza versus Yolo Romero.
Well, what's the main event on that one?
That's Weidman Belfort.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. I hope it's not Ronda Rousey, because then they're going the wrong direction as far as making their money back.
But,
I mean, come on.
You hate Ronda Rousey.
I don't hate
Tito Ortiz. Come on,
Ronda
man.
Rousey sells. She's
She can't carry a pay-per-view.
I disagree with you.
I'll throw my wallet in right now, dude.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I'm telling you.
40%
if you can start, and I know she's hurt, so Holly Holmes is out, and we talked about this. I know she's hurt, but if you can begin to tell a story about Holly Holm and get people interested in Holly Holm, I'm telling you that Ronda Rousey is the draw right now. Because because here's the difference, you know, because the only other people that you could put on that list right now are kind of idiots, right? Like Jon Jones running around all this week telling everybody that the allegations against Bill Cosby are wrong because he's an idiot. You know, Ronda Rousey doesn't do stuff like that, right? So Ronda Rousey, to me, and I've said this on the show 1,000 times, is the draw in that organization right now, because she has held the belt the longest out of everyone who has a belt right now. And she is constantly doing things that move the organization and women's MMA specifically into the positive.
Absolutely.
Have I been gone that long?
And I think, I'm a huge, huge fan of what she's been doing. And you may be right, but I'm one of the people that I'm willing to take that bet, because I think when you watch Paige VanZant and Curran fight this past weekend, as a MMA fan, I'm all in on that fight. And I think that that part of the sport, for as much as we've kind of sort of gone all in, right? We've got two divisions now, and we've got a tough season and all of this stuff happening. We've kind of, as a sport, gone all in. We're doing this thing now.
Right.
That 6 years ago we said we would never do that. Now we're all in. If we're all in, I'm telling you right now that she can sell a pay-per-view by herself.
I think Joe Rogan said it best. He said she's not a once-in-a-lifetime. She's a once-in-forever. She's not great. She's the greatest women's MMA fighter.
Oh, there's I mean, if you take her out of the equation, I can't even have this conversation
right? No.
But I think Ronda Rousey is gold, not only for the sport of MMA, but for the UFC. And she has been, of the 40% that they lost in 2015, she was the 60% that they won.
I think, and this is my point here, I think if you keep her at a co-main event, and then whatever the main event is, which is going to be, you know, at least a strong welterweight, if not 85 and above, you know, title fights, your revenue on those pay-per-views will be a whole lot higher. If she carries a pay-per-view by herself, I don't think the revenues will match up the same. I think it'll be a little bit less.
And like I said, you
compare those numbers.
You might be right, but I'm telling you, for as excited as we are to see Weidman and Belfort, there's just as much interest in Kat and Ronda.
Yeah. They've got some history, too. So, yeah, I mean, there's a story behind that.
Yeah, very little.
Find me.
They've got a lot of history.
Joe, I'm giving you an assignment for next week. I want you to see if you can either get a hold of Dave Meltzer or find his, you know, his prognostications, because they're pretty spot on. Find me a pay-per-view where Weidman has the belt and isn't paired with Ronda versus the ones where he's paired with Ronda, and see how those stack up. Because I'm telling you, they're going to be much, much larger. Because I think she's a bigger draw than he is right now. Now, if he, you know, this is a huge test for him. So this is my caveat to this argument. If he beats Belfort in a handy fashion, I should say, 2 minutes of the first round, something destructive, right? There's nobody else can start saying this Anderson fluke stuff anymore. That's out the window.
Yeah, I think, because whether he beats him or not, because it happened such a long time ago.
But there's still, you're really close because you're friends with those guys, right? You're friends with Sarah and all those guys. So you're close to how they want him to be bigger than he is right now. But there's a contingent of fans that still think, the first one was a fluke. And the second one, he broke his leg. So, he didn't beat him really either one of those times. So I don't know how he could be considered the champ, right? That's a real conversation that's happening out there. And so what I'm saying is, if he goes out and trounces Belfort, it's going to be really hard to have that conversation. Because I know, and you know, and Joe knows, and everybody who listens to this podcast knows that Weidman's the real deal.
But here's the flip side of that coin. Is if he does that, then the bigger story is going to be, well, that's Vitor off of, you know, TRT.
That will be part of it,
that's,
right?
That's going to be a whole lot bigger.
But I think you're running out of excuses to say that Chris Weidman isn't the real champ.
And they're also going to say, well, you know, Anderson kicked him in the face in 1 minute of that fight. And that was, you know, so then they're going to compare their, you know, Anderson and Weidman again.
So you're making my case for
them,
right?
Yeah,
there are no discussions like that about Ronda Rousey.
No.
She's finished everybody.
She finished everybody. Yeah. There was questions about could she only do an armbar? Then she finished somebody by punching them in the kidney.
I'm not taking anything away from that woman. What she does in the cage, it's like the same thing when Michael Jordan, in his era, he's doing things against the guys in his league that people just couldn't keep up with him. She just happens to be at that right place at the right time of women's MMA where women just can't touch her. That's just the way it is. You know, and she... Awesome, you know, the stars lined up, however you want to look at it. Let's go to boxing. Look at Lennox Lewis. He was a dominant heavyweight champion. There just wasn't any talent. So what did he get? He got bashed for, oh, well, you're not fighting tough people. There are some people out there saying, well, Ronda just – there's just not tough women in that division. Well, I beg to differ. There are.
To differ with that, and I guess I go back to this part of the conversation. And fair or unfair – I unabashedly am a fan of Ronda Rousey, so I'm not using this as the cornerstone for my argument. But if Ronda Rousey is, I don't know, pick anybody on here. If Ronda Rousey is Kelvin Gastelum, we would be buying banners and T-shirts and socks and shoes and belts and anything we could get our hands on because look at this amazing guy who came out of the tough house and he beats everybody in arm bars in 7 seconds and he's been beaten, and he just comes onto the scene and he does things that nobody else can
do,
right? Yeah. So if Michael Jordan plays in the WNBA, we're probably not having the same conversation.
Right.
And so that's why I'm saying that I think – 2 years ago, I would have probably been closer to you than I am right now. Where in this past year, I think she has saved the organization. And
I mean, you know what? Who knows? You know what? Maybe in 2015, if she gets through Cap pretty easily, then that might be just the finishing whatever it needs to carry the pay per view. I wouldn't put anything below welterweights. I would not put them in. I wouldn't carry those guys. For a pay-per-view, you need good, heavy, big guys to fight.
You'd put lightweights, you know, headlining a pay-per-view. Anthony Pettis, Gil Melendez. That's a
hang on. Like I'm not going to disagree with him, right? Like I'm going to tell you that Sean Dazey, if Sean Dazey is Joe Silva, he's making a pay per view that's got Conor McGregor on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we're in agreement with that, then I think the Ronda thing is still a thing. Because if Ronda's just an average woman who's got the belt, we're having the same argument. Anybody under 170, sure. You've got to be co-main. But to me, it's Ronda Rousey, so sure. It deserves its own spotlight. And I hope she fights one more time in 2015. I know she's fighting early, so it kind of leaves the door open for another fight. I'd love to see them give it a go and put her on. Not, obviously, by herself or in some weird stacked thing where it's an all-women's card, nothing like that.
Yeah.
But a co-main that's a draw but not a title fight.
Yeah, because like the Holly Holm thing is not going to happen.
No, she's hurt, yeah. So she's got to get a fight first before she's even in discussion.
So if she beats Kat and then Holly gets better and then she wins a fight and then you can push them towards the second half of the year, man, that'd be a great little matchup and a paycheck for everybody.
Yeah, so Ronda said, and it was kind of vague, but she said that she's got some major career decisions to make after this fight. What I think she means by that is that she's going to do some Hollywood work.
Why not?
Yeah, it's and then she'll probably have an end of the year fight with Holly Holm.
You'll make $5 million and
she's
two, 3 months.
You know, she's on that same trajectory, and I know you're going to hate me for doing this, but she's on the same trajectory as The Rock was, right? Like one of the biggest stars in the organization at the time. You can argue that Stone Cold Steve Austin at the time was just as big or as big as The Undertaker and all that stuff, but The Rock just. Right time, right place, took a couple roles, exactly like she did. You know, took the Scorpion King, didn't have to talk a lot, just kind of had to flex and throw people around, right? And then, you know, you fast forward to now, he's got his own HBO show where he's a sports agent. And so, yeah, you've got to make some decisions because, Sean, you'll be the first one to tell us that it's not an easy way to make a living, right? And if somebody's going to give you $1 million to be an entourage as opposed to getting $1,000 to get punched in the face, that's an easy decision to make.
You know what's funny? An old friend of mine, he was actually one of my first martial arts instructors when I was a kid. He hits me up and he wants me to help him out with this thing. It's some kind of like a reality show that has fight choreographing and stunt work and things like that. And I'm like, you know what? I might just walk away as a trainer and go towards that, dude. You know what I mean? I'm not even fighting. And just as a trainer, you know, I put my body through a lot of stuff. And I'm sparring, you know, a lot of the guys that I train. And I love it. You know, it keeps me in shape for the most part. And, you know, keeps me sharp and quick and fast and all that. But I'm like, man, this might be something. It's not real. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to take a punch in the face anymore. I got a deviated septum. I've been trying to get this surgery done for like 8 years, and I can't do it because
you'll waste the money. You'll get punched in the face like 6 months later, and you'll be back at it.
Exactly. So, and I told myself, well, when I retire from fighting, that's when I'll get it. But then I got these guys that, you know, like Kevin, whoever, I'm trying to get to the big show, and not to sound too whatever, but they need me. I need to be in there. I got to be sparring with them. I got to be, even if I'm not sparring, if I'm holding pads, you know, let's say accidentally they hit me.
Sure.
You know, it's like, you just got to be there. And you know, I got this other thing coming and it's like, you know, I might just kind of lean towards that a little bit and kind of, you know, back away. Cause I'll be honest with you guys. It's awesome going to the big show. It's great to go in the UFC. It's great to be behind the scenes and you hang out, you know, and you're meeting all the right people. But it's a lot of headache, and it's a lot of problems individually. I mean, things can get weird real fast because there's just too much money involved.
Sure.
And so you kind of want to, like, all right, you know, I'm not trying to discourage those guys. You guys go out there, get to the UFC, but it's hard to get there, and it's even harder to stay there.
And yeah. I think
– and Bobby Green's interview, when they asked him about, you know, what do you mean this could be your last fight? If you – that was a long interview. I think it was like 40 minutes or something like that. There was a part in there when he was talking about how – at the moment, he needs that money coming in, you know. Mm-hmm. And when you get injured, you know, you do, let's say you get two fights set up and you get hurt or your opponent gets hurt. And so that's two camps and that's money going out and you end up not fighting until the third camp, which is the third call. Then you finally get some money in. It's really, really, really tough, especially if you've got things that you are supporting, family, you know, if you got
whatever.
The best scenario, You're totally on your own. You're independent. You don't own anything. You don't own a house. You're just little guy, small dude going through life, and you got these great skills and your awesome talent, and you make it to the big show. You'll be able to make good amount of money. But if you've got, you know, let's say you already have three kids and you have a house and you're a really good fighter, you got all this stuff going on, man, you can get derailed so fast, you know.
Yeah.
It's
MMA
tough.
Is a young man's sport.
It's a
right?
very young man's sport.
And it's no different than other professional sports in that a very small percentage, a fraction
yeah,
of a percent,
everyone's
are going to make it to the
there.
Pro.
Everybody's a superstar.
Yeah. If you look at the whole world, how many, call it 500 MMA fighters are making a good living in the whole world?
Man. Unless you're in... Even let's take a second tier show. Take Bellator, World Series. I think the World Series title guys, when they win and they defend the belt, I think they're getting 10 and 10. They're making 20 yeah. grand. Forget
wow.
about their.
Wow. Is right. that a real number?
It's a real number. I think, who was it? I think it was when Josh Berkman beat Fitch or
yes,
something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think he only got 10 and 10 for that fight.
Unreal.
You know?
Yeah, well, so yeah, you've got to make some decisions.
That's a very
right?
tough fight. Because you're only getting 20 grand if
well,
you win.
And, you know, to kind of put a bow on this, right? So Rhonda is a young woman, right? Mm-hmm. And she's been doing this since she's been five.
Right.
Right?
Doing
and people,
judo.
You know, people forget that she's yeah. been fighting mm-hmm. since she was five. And so when you think about that, when most people get started on a hobby at 18, she's done that for 13 years by that point. You know, when you in your junior year decide that you want to go take a jiu-jitsu class, she's been doing judo for 12 years at that point. So, yeah, we'll wait and see, I guess, what happens after this cat fight. But to kind of just say, I just think I would love to see them give her a shot to do it on her own, especially if she's going to go the Rock route and, you know, start bringing people right. in from Hollywood to watch
yeah,
these
she's
fights.
She's already gone that route.
For sure.
I think she'll be more successful in Hollywood than Gina Carano.
Oh, hands down.
She already
yeah.
is.
Yeah, is she yeah. already?
Oh, yeah, because well, yeah. Gina did a bunch of B-movies. She did yeah. two A-ones right yeah. back to back. I mean, say what you want about The Expendables, but it's a big budget film with
absolutely.
A lot of promotion yeah. behind it. So, yeah. Yeah, so there's that. All right, we'll stop it here and hope that you and your family have a brilliant Thanksgiving holiday. And when we come back next week, Sean may or may not be with us. We don't know if this is a once every 3 months sort
no,
of thing
no, 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 no,
or
no,
no. or yeah. or what it is. But have a wonderful weekend. You two have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you next week.
Way of the Warrior. Get that ice cold, Michelle. Fight for that white gold.